Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke in the Motor City Studio, Anthony Bellino coming from the Radio Bunker, joining us on the horn right now, an NBA veteran scout for over 20 years and former NCAA college basketball coach, our good buddy Darren Cohn. DK, the coach, the scout, my man. How are you, my friend? I believe, you know, all the years we've been doing this together on the radio, I think this is the first time on the new program here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, I probably have a face for radio, but, you know, that's okay. You can flex it up on the TV, and I'm happy to be back with you again. I'm happy that we got hoops to talk about. I mean, we had the high school this year, we had the college, and, you know, we've had the professionals, so there's been no delays. March Madness took place, the greatest month in sports, and we're down to the Final Four. We're down to the Final Four. A little disappointed because I went to 17 or 18 Final Fours in a row and not going to be live in attendance in Indianapolis this upcoming week. But I'm still happy and excited to get to view it and know that it's happening.
You know, Darren, you and I have ran into each other, obviously, all over the place in Southeast Michigan and in Northwest Ohio. But at Chrysler Center, you know, with your track record as an NBA scout, when you're there in person, when you're there watching guys, when you have particular assignments for guys that you might be interested in, maybe somebody else catches your eye while you're there. How much, I guess, more difficult is it for scouts in today's COVID world where there are restrictions on who can get into the buildings, colleges across the country, everybody's kind of on their own rules as how many you know fans they're allowing in the stands, and then what the media accessibility is, what the scouting accessibility is. How has the scouting changed from the NBA perspective now looking at the college game as we get closer and closer to the draft and to the lottery, and of course with the Final Four, like you mentioned, all those consecutive years of making it to the Final Four, not being able to be in attendance this year? It has to change how, you know, scouts are trying to view these players, because it's different to watch it on tape versus being there in person.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, a lot of it, frankly, was just completely shut down for quite a while. Now it's much more shifting, just like business meetings have shifted to Zoom and virtual appointments and things like that. You know, the NBA scouting, both for game planning purposes and scouting for upcoming opponents, and also player personnel scouting for trades or upcoming drafts, has shifted much more heavily to data and analytics and video and film, and, you know, one, for safety, two, you know, because, as you mentioned, the restrictions getting in and out of gyms. But what my specialty was, for the most part, I did a little bit of the other side, but for the most part, my specialty was being courtside, whether it was scouting another NBA team or a specific player or a college player or college tournament or event, or even sometimes, you know, high school summer tournaments. And a lot of that, if not all of that, has really been clamped down. And it'll be interesting to see if it ever comes back. And it's trickled down, you know, to the college coaches recruiting at the high school level and you know, back and forth up and down the ladder of the levels of sports. And, you know, and what always ultimately happens, just like it's happening in a lot of businesses, is people say, yeah, we were doing this for safety and, you know, wanted to keep the wheels turning, but it was the best thing during COVID. And then they realize, wow, we're also saving a lot of money doing it this way, so maybe we should just keep it this way. So, because it's obviously a lot more cost effective to hire some young guys out of college and toss them in a video room for, you know, a medial salary and put them in front of monitors all day long doing data and analytics and video breakdown than it is to, you know, fly guys around the country in hotels and cars and lodging and food. And also, you know, most guys that are scouting at the NBA level are much more tenured, so they require much more of a salary or payroll commitment.
Wow, it's incredible how this has kind of changed everything. And, you know, even for businesses that have, you know, if they have real estate in, you know, metropolitan areas, you know, we could look to Dan Gilbert in Detroit and some of the relief that he provided to some of the businesses, you know, as far as, you know, their basic like monthly rent and trying to give them a pass because, you know, they need bodies in, you know, they need people in those buildings. And it's interesting now with the work from home and how many companies are going to continue to go this digital route if they figure that, hey, it's better for the employee if it's more cost effective. But how does it change what you're able to see when you watch, when you turn on tape versus being there in person? Because I feel like, you know, I'm one of the spoiled ones who got a pass to get into the Michigan games and get into Toledo games because I had to work. So it, for me, you can pick up on all kinds of little things sitting there courtside, you know, listening to Juwan Howard and Tom Izzo chatter back and forth to one another and just kind of get a feel for what's happening that the camera doesn't catch.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's exactly it. It's the feel, it's the emotion, it's the small tidbits, the keys of the game, the things off camera when you're actually viewing the videoing of an actual game or the airing of a game. You don't necessarily always get to see the bench. You don't get to see people in the back hallway coming out of the locker room. How do they interact with their teammates or with fans or with their coaches? How do they prepare in pregame? See, one of my things is I love to be the first one in the gym at like 2 hours before tip off and see what time does this player arrive? What, you know, what is their approach? Is it a business approach? Is it jovial? Is it not serious at all? You know, so I'm really huge on that time up until tip off. I think you can learn a lot about a player, you know, in that time, you know, prior to the actual game. Plus, it's really hard to hear on film, you know, what's the player saying? What's his attitude? What's his feedback to referees? Again, what's his feedback to his coaching, to his teammates? And then, you know, you just can't always gauge the exact hustle and heart and passion on film because it looks different. It's a different speed. You know, I always think it's funny when for many years I spoke at NBA Summer League to all the rookies before they came into their first NBA season. And one of the things they always talked about in college, you watch NBA and they always think, oh, yeah, I can play at that level and I'm that good and I have that ability. But the shocking thing to almost every rookie is the speed and the pace of the game. And you just can't gauge that. I don't care how good the cameras and the lighting are. It's just different when you're there live and in person around the greatest athletes in the world, specifically at the NBA level. And, it, you know, it's the same concept at the college level. So you just don't – you're trusting the data and the facts of what your eyes tell you when you're looking at stat sheets and analytics and videotape. But I feel like you get an emotional, a heart reaction almost, a feel, you know, when you've been around a sport or a game for – you know, decades and decades, and then you're there in person and you're looking this guy in the eyes or you're watching him from 5 feet away. It's a feel thing. Like you get a premonition almost that you can't certainly get no matter how many times you watch a film.
Veteran NBA scout and NCAA coach Darren Cohn joining us right now here on X's and Bros. And Darren, when you look at the Elite Eight leading into the Final Four, the UCLA Bruins on Tuesday night shocked the world, or at least shocked my world. They rocked it big time. 51-49, Michigan's lowest offensive output of the season. What felt like a very uncharacteristic night for these Wolverines. 14 turnovers, another number that was staggering. When you looked at how important and pivotal Mike Smith has been all year, and of course Franz Wagner, one of those guys that you know, if you're a Michigan fan, you depend on Franz to have a good game. Those two combined, 2 of 17 from the floor, just 7 points between them and 3 turnovers. To me, the best way that I knew how to describe it yesterday was, frankly, this was a really bad day for the Michigan Wolverines, and they just happened to have a really bad day on the most pivotal day of the season. Like, that's what it was for me. The shots didn't fall. Johnny Zhuzhang did his thing for UCLA. I mean, he scored 28. There's no Isaiah Livers, so maybe a little more responsibility on Franz. What did you make of Michigan's performance and lack of offense and just the overall struggle from two of their top performers all season?
Yeah, I completely agree with your assessment. Basically, it was a bad day at a bad time. And, you know, we saw that from them a couple times being Michigan throughout the regular season. So we knew that they had that in them, you know, and every team does at some point. But unfortunately, it just came up on the wrong day. And that's kind of the mystique of quote-unquote March Madness, because I still think Michigan's the better team head-to-head on paper and off paper. And, you know, if you wanted the best team to win and move on, you play a best-of-seven series like the NBA does, and you got to win 4 to advance. And I feel pretty confident that Michigan's going to win 4 out of 7 games against UCLA. But UCLA was better for that 40 minutes. So they're in the Final Four, baby. They're dancing.
Crazy. And I don't think that, you know, even though UCLA is like the last team in and they got to play a first four game and they are the second first four team to make the Final Four since, you know, VCU did it a few years ago. But it's kind of weird to think of UCLA as like a Cinderella story just because of their heritage, the wooden ties, the history of the program. You know, it doesn't feel like a Cinderella story. It just seems like a team that, you know, lost 4 to back their way into the tournament. 4 consecutive losses for the Bruins on their way into the tourney. They backed in. Mick Cronin has them rolling at the right time. And, you know, they have some players like Johnny Zhuzhang, who's now a household name because of what he's been able to do this March. But I don't feel like they're like a Cinderella story. It's UCLA, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, one of the most historic programs in the history of college basketball. And you know, when you really think about it, in that play-in game, Michigan State led the majority of that game, and Michigan State had two shots in the final second to win the game in regulation, and they just both came up short. UCLA was able to pull away and win in overtime. But, I mean, for the majority of that game, I remember that game was the late game, and it went well into the wee hours of the morning on a work night, and I remember thinking, like, Michigan State's going to win in advance. And then, you know, you almost forget about that. Two short weeks ago, UCLA was almost eliminated in the first game, and now, you know, they're dancing. So they got it going at the right time, as you mentioned, coming in on a four-game losing streak. And now they flipped the script on that and went all the way straight to the Final Four.
It is simply incredible. The Final Four is set. We'll have Baylor in Houston on one side, Gonzaga in UCLA on the other side. A lot of talk about this Gonzaga team and the way that they just absolutely dismantled USC. I mean, Gonzaga is rolling through this tournament. I mean, when you think about it, 98-55 over Norfolk. Thanks for coming out and playing. They beat, you know, Oklahoma by 16, 87-71. Creighton, who came in after beating our beloved Ohio Bobcats with our boy Kyle Barlow on the staff there, they beat the brakes off of Creighton 83-65, and then they just pounded USC. Gonzaga looking like one of those teams, when you just look at point differential, this is a historic run that we are watching right now. They've got talent everywhere. They've got legitimate, maybe next-level talent. What do you see from Gonzaga? What do you like about this team, and how many pros they got running around out there?
You know, I love the fact that they do all the things naturally that you have to do to be a great team. Like, the coach doesn't have to bring it out of them. And there's five things that I think about when it comes to winning a championship. And, like, you really got to defend and especially guard on the basketball. And they put pressure on the ball. They guard in the half court, and they do it naturally. They rebound. They gang rebound. I mean, they don't have anyone in their starting lineup who doesn't go rebound the basketball. They make the effort plays. They're extremely unselfish. You know, they got, you know, basically seven guys that can go get double figures, maybe nine, you know, but certainly seven. And they play unselfish. They're always looking for the good shot. Doesn't matter who gets it, as long as it's a good shot. They play hard the entire game because they know they got, you know, legit four guys on the bench. They got depth that as soon as you take a second off, someone can come in and take your minutes. So everybody's competing. So I just love that about them. Depth, hustle, heart, unselfish, and then they do the tough things of defending and rebounding. You know, they got some natural scores. They definitely got some pros. You know, my two favorite players in the tournament were probably Hunter Dickinson and Jalen Suggs, Gonzaga's point guard. So Dickinson, Michigan center, is now out. So, I mean, Suggs, what a tough freshman point guard. And how did he get out of Big Ten country, being from Minnesota out to Gonzaga? I mean, and you want to talk about a pro? He's a pro.
His name has been up there in all the mock drafts. It's Suggs. It's Evan Mobley from USC, who, I mean, he got worked a little bit. To me, I look at Evan Mobley, 7'1". He can do everything. Kind of reminds me of a little bit of, and I'm just saying this from a frame and build standpoint, he's kind of like a Kevin Durant. Like, he's just tall, he's slim, he can do a lot of things. But he's gonna need to add some weight if he's gonna be an effective big man at the next level.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, kind of got to expose, you know, USC is a really talented team, and they got a couple NBA caliber players and talent. You know, so a lot of the commentators are saying USC had the best chance, you know, thus far in the tournament to knock off Gonzaga or at least make a run at it. And I mean, they got smacked from the gate. You know, it really wasn't even much of a contest. It's just a little embarrassing. You make it all the way to the Elite Eight, and then you really don't have much of a showing in it. But yeah, I mean, very talented young man. Unfortunately, his season is over. So now we'll have to decide, is he taking that leap or is he going to stick around?
Yeah, it's a big jump. It's a big decision. So out of Gonzaga and UCLA, based on what you saw from UCLA and how they have kind of, they've slowed some games down. They've dirtied it up a little bit. You know, their path wasn't great. You know, when you think about, okay, they beat BYU and then they had Abilene Christian. Okay, the big ones against Michigan. So that's all fine and dandy. Does UCLA stand a chance against the Zags?
You know, I didn't think UCLA stood a chance the last three games. So to be honest with you, last four games. So they're just on such a roll right now where they're probably overachieving and they're playing above their head. And that's part of the madness, man. You have that internal belief and nothing can slow you down. I mean, I really thought that they were going to lose, you know, basically every game that they played. If I was picking the bracket, I thought the other team was a little better, had a little more, and UCLA has found a way. So you can't bet against that. You know, how's Juzang's ankle? Because he did come up a little gingerly. He's had injury problems throughout the season. And all four teams left in the Final Four can really guard and defend. This might be the best four teams defensively that I can recall in the last 15 years in the Final Four. So I don't know that these are going to be high-scoring affairs, though they're all capable of scoring. I think they're going to get after it, and these games are going to get ugly, and it's going to be interesting how the officiating is. Are they calling it tight? Are they calling it loose? At the end of the day, I don't think UCLA has a chance to beat Gonzaga. And I'm going to say this because I am not a betting man. I'm not a gambler. However, now that sports betting is so popular, they put the betting line on everything, and I believe I saw Gonzaga was favored by 14. I'll tell you what. I'll take them points with UCLA, though. I don't think Gonzaga's going to lose, in a Final Four game, that's going to be low scoring. To say that Gonzaga is going to beat you by 14 when a team's playing with the confidence that UCLA is, I think that's a pretty interesting bet that I'd be intrigued by.
I'll tell you what, that's a little nugget of information for all our friends out there on the other side, Baylor and Houston. Darren, my friend, what do you make of the Baylor Bears in their run? I mean, a one seed, they make it. Gonzaga's a one seed, they made it. Houston's a two seed. We know about Ohio State and their two seed withdraws, but who do you like in Baylor and Houston?
So I like Baylor. I mean, way back when this all started, I had Baylor and Gonzaga in my finals in my bracket. So far that stood correct. I mean, they're very similar. They're very similar. It's like Houston is just is like a clone of Baylor, but just not quite as good, and maybe one player less in the depth chart. I think Baylor might be the best on-ball defending team in the NCAA this year, and they might be the best overall three-point shooting team in NCAA. And Houston, that's what they're great at. They're great at defending in the half court, and they're great at shooting the three, but they're just not quite as good as Baylor. So unless something, you know, goes catastrophic, I see Baylor winning and advancing in a close game with two similar styles there.
He is Darren Cohn, NBA scout, former college coach. Darren, my friend, as always, partner, thank you so much for the time. Great to have you on this morning. Thanks for coming and chatting a little hoops with us, and let's touch base soon.
You bet. Appreciate it, man. Look forward to getting back on.